On episode 22 of A Duff Said, we celebrate the life of Scott Reese.
He was just one of those guys that everybody knew. And frankly, I think everyone loved. I've never heard a bad thing about him.
From his days as a legally blind place kicker for his high school football team.
I asked my head coach, I said, you know, I got a far out question for you. Would you ever consider letting me kick? And he said, yeah, I'm not going to tell you no in terms of what it is that you want to do.
To some rare recordings where you will hear Scott do what he did best, give his opinion.
I'm a big believer in the philosophy that we're all here together, we might as well find something that can make us coexist.
We pay tribute to the man who called himself Scotty Eyes, and that's A Duff Said. Thank you so much for listening to this special edition of A Duff Said. I'm your host, Duff Tyler. Thank you so much for hitting the play button on this podcast. Now, back in September, I introduced everyone to one of my old college classmates at Indiana State University, Scott Reese. Now, Scott was a character. He always tried to make people laugh, and he always let you know where he stood on everything. That's because Scott was not at all shy about sharing his opinion, and Scott had an opinion on everything. Scott just wanted to do his best to fit in wherever he went, and I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that he didn't want to be defined by his disability. Now, Scott suffered from a condition known as optic nerve hypoplasia. It left him legally blind from the time that he was 2 years old. Now, despite that, when he was in high school, he took on the kicking duties for his school's football team, and he made several extra points for the Griffith Panthers, and it made him somewhat of a celebrity. Now, Scott always loved to share his story, and so back in September, I had him on episode 10 of A Duff Said to talk about that. Now, this was the first time that he and I had spoke in a couple of years, and I gotta tell you, it was really good to hear his voice again. But unfortunately, it would be one of the last times a lot of people would hear it. Sadly, on October 29th, Scott was murdered outside of his apartment on the northeast side of Indianapolis. Now, police don't know what caused this to happen. What we do know is that there was a struggle, and Scott was stabbed multiple times, and he passed away before help could arrive. Nearly a month and a half later, no arrests have been made in this case, and it appears as though police have no suspects. They are asking anyone with information on this case to please call area code 317-262-TIPS. Now, because this podcast has the potential to reach a worldwide audience, if you hear this and you have any information that can help police catch the person who did this, I am begging you, please speak up. We need to bring this monster to justice. They need to answer for what they did to my friend. Now, I also ask that as you listen to this, please keep Scott's sister, Catherine, in your thoughts and prayers. Now, as you might expect, this has been a nightmare for her. Scott and Catherine lost both their parents within the last couple of years, and now she's had to go through the whole ordeal of burying her little brother. Now, one of the things that Kat told me following Scott's death was that she wanted to hear Scott's voice again. And as it turned out, I had just the thing for that. I had some recordings that Scott and I did a few years back that have pretty much been sitting in my own personal vault. So I decided to blow the dust off of them, and later on, you will hear some of those recordings. And Kat, I hope this gives you a small measure of comfort, and I hope this helps bring you a little bit of peace. But before we get into that, I want to fulfill one of Scott's last wishes. One of the last things that Scott posted on my Facebook page was a desire to do a podcast with one of our old college buddies, David Hooper. Now, David was the sports editor of the Indiana State University school newspaper, the Indiana Statesman, and Scott was one of his writers. Now, David would step down from that role in the fall of 1999 to make a run for mayor of the city of Terre Haute. Now, he did not win the election, but I gotta tell you, it was a lot of fun to watch him go after it. And on a side note, while I was covering his campaign, I was able to launch my career into television. And so when I was putting this podcast together, I couldn't think of a better person to come on and talk about Scott. And so here now is a trip back in time to the late 1990s at Indiana State University, and my conversation with David Hooper starts now. David, thank you so much for making the time and talking to us about Scott Reese.
Great to be with you, Duff.
Yeah, let's talk about those days, man. You had myself, you and Scott. That was quite a trio at Indiana State University.
It was an awesome time to be in sports journalism at Indiana State. We got a new coach, Royce Waltman, who ended up taking the Sycamores to the NCAA tournament a couple times. Larry Bird returned to the Indiana Pacers at that time. They renewed the IU-Indiana State rivalry, so we got to cavort with the likes of Bobby Knight, Larry Bird, Royce Waltman. The Colts played a couple of ISU players, ended up playing other NFL teams that had ISU players on them, because ISU football had kind of a resurgence in the late 90s, mid-late 90s. It was a great time to be involved with ISU sports there 20 years ago. Hard to believe it's been 20 years, but We just had a great, great time and a great experience. And, you know, I know what this interview is about, and I just can't believe what's happened to Scott. It won't ever wear off, and it hasn't worn off. And, you know, it's awful.
I know exactly where I was the moment I found out. I had just woken up from a nap, and it was like I woke up to a bad dream. I was on Facebook. I was just flipping through my mentions, and all of a sudden I start seeing all these posts about how much Scott meant to them and how they're going to miss him. And I'm like, wait a second, what happened to Scott? Because just a month prior to all of this, I had had him on my podcast. He was on episode 10 to talk about his days as a high school football kicker, despite the fact that he was legally blind. So I wanted him to share his story and how that whole journey unfolded for him. And now I'm reading all these posts about him in the past tense, and I'm like, I can't believe this is happening, because I had just reconnected with Scott. He and I did all those recordings that you're going to hear later in the podcast 5 years ago as part of another podcast that I had done, but we kind of fell out of touch after that because Scott had kind of gone off the grid a little bit, as Scott tended to do from time to time throughout his life. But all of a sudden, he and I got reconnected, and one of the last posts that he made, one of the last communications that he and I had, was on Facebook, and it was a message that was tagged to both you and myself saying that we need to get together and collaborate on something. And then all of a sudden, I'm reading that Scott had unfortunately been taken from us. And so I was going through a whirlwind of emotions like that. I couldn't even stand. I was so shocked by what had happened. How did you take the news?
Well, not well. Just like you, Scott and I had just reconnected, even shorter term, though. I had seen Scott on the town here in Indianapolis. Scott was social. Scott liked to go out, have drinks, meet people, talk to people. And I was out in Broad Ripple a week before he died and went into a local establishment there in Broad Ripple to have some beers with some friends. And there, right there, is what we called him, Scotty Eyes. Remember that? That's what we called him, Scotty Eyes, in the flesh, right there. And I had seen him out before, but not approached him. But finally, I just I got up the courage, you know, to just let's reconnect. And so I approached him. I said, Scotty Eyes. And Scott was, as you've talked about ad nauseum, legally blind, but he still had some vision. And immediately he goes, David Hooper. So he recognized me or my voice right away. It was all just off from there, reminiscing about all those times we had in the 90s. He posted, I saw the post you mentioned. I looked at it too. I clicked on his Facebook page, and just like you, I see all these commemorative requests, and I'm like, oh my God, what happened? I start clicking on things. And
you know, needless to say, the brutal details of his murder are there linked up to some people's posts. And what's the reaction? I mean, you're numb. I was just numb. I was in disbelief. Just everybody you've talked to has said the same thing. He'd never hurt a fly. Who would do this? This makes absolutely no sense. It's senseless. So the only word I could use, Duff, is numb when I put two and two together, clicking through the Facebook links. It's hard to put into words.
I'm right there with you, Dave. And when I read about this, not only was I sad that somebody took my friend, but it saddens me that somebody would do this to a person that was legally blind and couldn't defend themselves. This happened outside of his apartment, and somebody just brutally took his life like this. It just, I can't even put it into words.
I can't either. It's obviously, whoever did this is, you pick the word, you know.
Coward.
Psychotic, insane. Who would do this to someone who's blind? It makes no sense. And coward, too. Yes, did you say coward?
I did, yeah, and that's how. I feel like there is a special place in hell for the person who did this.
Absolutely. It's you know, who knows? Who knows what goes on behind closed doors? But as far as I could tell, this is senseless. Makes no sense whatsoever. And you're a sports journalist. I went on to get my law degree. And neither of us have any words, if that tells your listeners anything. Just no words.
All right, well, I want to move on to more happier times, because this is a tribute to Scott. This is not to talk about the way in which he left this world. I want to talk about how the day he came into your world, what was it like the first time you met Scott Reese?
So, yes, as you mentioned, I was the sports editor of the student newspaper at Indiana State University in the late 90s. Did it for a few years. We had a shortage of writers. We had a couple of writers leave, and the editor-in-chief started hiring writers, including sports writers. She did so without me knowing. That was kind of her style. She was that's just the way she was. She did things her own way.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, you remember who I'm talking about, yeah. She who shall remain nameless, but anyhow. I come from the newsroom one day, and she introduces me to Scott Reese. And I shake his hand, and he's looking right through me. Not at me, not around me, but kind of through me. And so I don't even really kind of pick up on anything, just that he has a funny look about him. And then as we're sitting there talking, he tells me that he's legally blind. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, this is interesting. How are we going to work this? And I can tell you, as the months went on, and this was the fall semester, so football was the first assignment. And you might remember this one, Indiana State being what was then 1AA football, now they call it FCS. They always play one big money game a year, and the money game that year was at number two or three, Kansas State, when they had Michael Bishop at quarterback, and Indiana State went out to Manhattan, Kansas, to collect a check and get beat really bad, 66-0, if I recall. I just remember they had a hard time even getting into their own getting out of their own territory and getting into Kansas State territory. I remember that part of the trip. But I took Scott with me, and we had to kind of guide him around. He would take my arm, and I would take him around the stadium to get to the press box. But with binoculars, and this is before he got the ocular help that he got later in life that some of your listeners may listen to. He used binoculars, and he could follow the game a little bit with the binoculars. But he had whether it's because of his high school football or just being a sports fan, he had a very, very deep and impressive knowledge of football and other sports. So he was able to follow the game. He was able to ask questions of Bill Snyder, who was the coach at Kansas State then, and Tim McGuire, who was the coach at Indiana State. He was able to ask poignant, relevant questions during the press conferences. And I think I gave him the game story. I can't remember. And then as things progressed, we gave him his own column. I think, Duff, you might be able to help me with this. Did we call it Reese's Pieces? Is that what we
did.
Call it?
That's exactly what we called it.
I have those papers somewhere in my garage from the 90s whenever I was writing. So it progressed into giving him his own column. He traveled with me to Arch Madness, the Missouri Valley Conference men's basketball tournament in St. Louis. And I made a note here when prepping for my interview with you, how I recall he was able to hang in discussions with all the St. Louis media about St. Louis Blues hockey and NHL hockey in general. He was a hockey nut. That was really his thing, football and hockey. So his knowledge of hockey was really, really impressive. But yes, we gave him his own column. He did some game stories for us. I think we gave him even some more leeway and let him get into some professional wrestling, which is, that's another interesting tidbit. We gave him a column. I said, Scott, it's your column, write what you want. So he did a few professional wrestling columns. I don't remember how well they were received, but they ran in the paper. And I know he started getting prank calls by people pretending to be professional wrestlers just to mess with them. I remember having that laugh with him. So he got to do that. The legally blind thing and the high school kickers part is a great story. But your listeners need to know he actually had a brain up there that was very sharp. Knew sports, knew how to write, knew how to question people. And I think he did it for just a year, Duff, and I think he might have left ISU about this because I graduated later that year. But I think he also left as well. But no, he was as good a college sports writer as anyone we had on staff.
You mentioned the pro wrestling thing, and I'll never forget how he described that Kansas State game. His lead sentence was, Indiana State University was trying to pull off the biggest upset since Lawrence Taylor beat Bam Bam Bigelow in WrestleMania. I was like, what? What is this?
Yeah.
That's a different lead than what we're used to.
I kind of remember whether I should have, as the editor, cut that out or not. So you're telling me I let that through and we printed that, huh?
I liked it. I thought it was clever. I mean, it's different, and that's who Scott was. You know, he was his own unique individual. And so now I have to share my story as to how I met Scott Reese. And this takes us to the world of radio at Indiana State University, the campus radio station WISU. Now, they had an alternative rock format that they played a couple nights a week called Underground Air. And during the fall semester of 1998, I was able to get the Monday night shift for Underground Air. I was super stoked to get that because out of all the formats that they had at WISU, aside from sports, the one that I wanted to tackle was being an alternative rock DJ. So I got the Monday night shift and I'm supposed to have a co-host that's supposed to work alongside with me on that show. But the first night that I'm doing Underground Air, that person is running way late. So I'm just going through the playlist and I'm doing my normal routine to get me through the show when into the studio walks this guy that I have never seen before in my life. And so I look up and I say, are you my co-host? And he looks back and he says, I could be. And I'm like, well, hey, go ahead, throw on some headphones. Let's do some radio. So he sits down and he's getting ready. And I say, by the way, what's your name? And he said, well, I'm Scott, but you can call me Scotty Eyes. Okay, Scotty Eyes, that's a cool name. What's the story behind that? And then he goes on to inform me that he's legally blind, but that doesn't slow him down. That's not who he is as a person. He just wants to be a normal person like anyone else. He is not his disability. So he tells me that story, and then we go on to do a few crosstalks on Underground Air, and then the person who's supposed to be my co-host shows up. And so that was one of only a few times that I got to do Underground Air with Scott. But I got to tell you, Dave, out of all the partners that I had at Underground Air, he was probably the one that brought the most personality to the role. I got to tell you, you know, he may not have been the best guy at radio, but he always brought a positive energy to the role, and he always brought an opinion with him. And Scott, he had an opinion on everything, and that made him a great partner. And I think you're going to hear that later on in some of these podcasts. Scott always brought something to the table.
Absolutely. He was very opinionated. Every time we were in the newsroom at the sports desk, it was whatever the issue of the day was. I didn't follow hockey, so I couldn't talk hockey with him.
And I liked wrestling in the late 80s when I was younger, but I didn't follow wrestling too much. But I do remember that. Scott always let you know where he stood on issues, always had an opinion. And you're right, he was a character. Everyone knows him. I mean, I challenge anybody here listening to your podcast who spent 1 hour at Indiana State University, student, alum, faculty, staff, administrator, whoever, I guarantee you they've heard of him or know about him. Just everybody knew him, not because, well, and maybe in part because of the story that he overcame legal blindness to become a field goal kicker, but just because of who he was. And he, like you said, he was a character. He was just one of those guys that everybody knew. And frankly, I think everyone loved. I've never heard a bad thing about him.
I want to get into the story now about him being a legally blind place kicker for his high school football team. And I know I've said this many times, but when Scott first told me that story, I had my doubts. And I think a lot of us did back then. In fact, I flat out told him to his face, and pardon my language here, I said, "Scott, you're full of shit. There is no way you were a place kicker on your high school football team. I'll bet you would have a better chance of kicking your own ass before you could ever put an extra point through the uprights." Now, I want to make sure that people understand that when I say that, I wasn't trying to be mean to Scott. It's just that we had no proof of this. This was the late 90s. News didn't get to people the way it does now. Scott couldn't just reach for his phone, do a Google search, find an article about that, or pull up YouTube and show us video proof on that. Back in the late 90s, if you wanted to prove your point or show people that you really were who you said you were, you had to go to VHS tape in order to get your story across. So one night, Dave, it was you, me, and Rich Lidstrom on our way to a field trip to Scott's dorm room. We weren't just seeking proof on him being a high school place kicker. We were also going there to meet this young lady that Scott was dating at the time, or so he said. So he opens the door, and we walk in, and there she is, right there on the bed, painting her toenails. So we're like, okay, she really does exist. Okay, Scott, we believe you on that. Now let's see the other thing. And so he pops in tape after tape after tape, and we are taken to Griffith, Indiana, and there is Scott, and he is drilling these extra points. He is putting them right through the uprights, and suddenly we look at each other and we're like, holy shit, he was telling the truth. He really was a place kicker for his high school football team. I never doubted him after that, Dave. What was your take on that night?
I remember that, Duff. That's another college memory I clearly have. First off, the funny part, the oh shit moment for me was not only was there the girlfriend, but she was actually pretty cute, if I remember.
She was. She was quite a looker.
She was a pretty lady. And the fun I had with it, I'm a huge golfer. That's my thing. I love to play golf. I watch golf. I follow golf. And he had gone to a national sports award ceremony. This is a kind of ESPY-ish. I don't even know if the ESPYs had even started then. But he had won an award for overcoming adversity. And Jack Whitaker was the presenter. And he told me all these stories about backstage with Jack and how Jack was having some drinks and just Jack being Jack Whitaker, carrying on and being the character he is. So to hear that Scott Reese got to this guy I'm in his dorm room, and I watched the interview. Scott's being interviewed by Jack Whitaker, and I say, "Scotty Ice, that's Jack Whitaker." He's like, "Oh yeah, let me tell you some stories." And again, he told me everything I just relate to you with a lot more detail. And I'll never forget that I was blown away that he was interviewed by Jack Whitaker and won this big national award that was on national television. He had the VH tape of that. He had all the newsreels, yeah, on VHS tape of all the features that they did on him being a place kicker while legally blind. I remember that. I don't remember you and Rich being there. I can't remember who was all there.
It was just the three of us.
Rich Lindstrom was also, he was the voice of the lady or the Indiana State women's basketball team. The coach back then hated being called Lady Sycamore, so I caught myself there. Cheryl Reeve, who's now gone on to great success in the WNBA was the women's basketball coach at Indiana State, and she hated the words Lady Sycamores. She just wanted to be called the Sycamores. But Rich was the voice of the women's basketball. He traveled with them, and then you were doing WISU stuff, and Scott and I were at the Statesman. But, yeah, I'll never forget that day. We found out he had a pretty girlfriend, and he was the real deal.
Yeah, he was walking tall after that night. And you'd want to talk about sports that I did. I did Indiana State University baseball, and Scott was my partner for a number of those games. And like you said, he had to watch the game through binoculars. And so it was fun to do those games with him. There were some moments that I had with Scott doing Indiana State University baseball, but the one that really stands out was the trip from hell that he and I took to Springfield, Missouri, for a four-game weekend series against the Missouri State Bears. Back then, they were the Southwest Missouri State Bears, and they put a whooping on Indiana State University. I think they hit in that four-game series almost 30 home runs against Sycamore pitching, and it's just one leaving the yard after another. And just to get to the ballpark for that road trip, we were on a bus, and before we even get through St. Louis, the bus blows a tire, and we had to stop and get that fixed, and that was just the bad omen for that entire weekend trip. Having Scott there really helped me get through it, because it was not a good year that year for Indiana State University baseball. It was tough to be behind the mics and constantly have to tell how they lost this game by a large margin. The pitching just wasn't there. The hitting wasn't there. And so when Scott was with me behind the mic for that whole four-game series, it really helped out. Home run after home run. There was a guy who was clubbing him out of the yard at a pretty good pace in that series. You may have heard of him. His name was Ryan Howard, who went on to be the first baseman for the Philadelphia Phillies when they won the World Series back in 2008. He was a freshman on that team, and he was just one of the many sluggers that just put an ass-whooping on Indiana State. And in the first two games of that series, they hit a combined 10 home runs, and they had 59 home runs at that time that the game had actually started. And so Scott and I are talking. I said, well, they hit 10 more home runs today, and how many does that give them, Scott? And he just gets this big grin on his face, and he goes, 69. And I was like, oh, no, I just set Scott up for this Beavis and Butthead moment. And then he quickly recovered, and he said, well, they got one more to go to catch McGuire. And I was like, oh, God, thank God he said that, because I didn't realize what I had done.
Oh, let me tell that story. When you're done, remind me to tell that
go
story.
Go right ahead. Take it away.
Well, I'm glad you said McGuire, because that was the year McGuire broke the record, at least when I knew him. And coming back from Kansas State, which was the money game first week of September, McGuire was one home run away, and we stopped at Busch. I'm glad you said this. I remember this now. We stopped at Busch Stadium on the way back from Manhattan, Kansas, to Terre Haute on a Sunday, because we stayed the night there Saturday. We got up Sunday. We stopped at Busch Stadium. McGuire was one hit away, or one home run away from tying, I think, the record back then. We're walking around Busch Stadium. Tickets are going for over $1,000. A scalper offered this dad and little kid $1,000 for each ticket, and the dad and kid said no, and I thought that was really neat. We're both poor college students, so pretty quickly we figured out this isn't going to happen. We're not getting into this game. So we got in our car and left. Turns out McGuire on that Sunday went 0-for-5, and he ended up breaking the record, I think, that following Tuesday or Wednesday, or tying it, the home run record. But I'll never forget that we talked about, and we walked around scalping tickets to that game coming back from Kansas State, Scotty Ives and I, and we're both relieved we didn't, you know, call our parents to beg for money, because McGuire went 0-for-5 on that Sunday.
But there's another story about that Missouri State trip, because as we're going on that long bus ride home and everybody is pissed off, they're miserable about how that series went, Scott looks to me and says, did you know I'm a big wrestling fan? It's like, yeah, I watched wrestling in the 80s. I know it's really popular right now because it's the Attitude Era and you got the NWO and WCW, but I haven't really been following that closely. And he starts talking about, like, all the guys that are in the ring that are the jobbers, the ones that are supposed to lay down for the superstars. And we talked about some of our favorites from back in the day, and he said, what if you and I were like a tag team that were jobbers? What would our names be? And I was like, I don't know. I haven't really given it much thought. And he said, well, I'll tell you what. I could be the blind assassin, and then you could be Duffer the Stuffer, because I told him that my grandpa gave me that nickname back in the day. And I was like, all right, blind assassin and Duffer the Stuffer. We could be tag team champs.
This sounds like a Scott Reese conversation, yes.
It totally was a Scott Reese conversation. And then we're talking about baseball, so I have to mention this night, Dave. This was a night in the 99 season. Scott and I were doing the game outdoors. It was a game against Illinois. It was a night game. It was a non-conference game for Indiana State. And you joined us for commentary on that game. And we ended up having one of the best broadcasts I have ever had. I specifically remember we were coming out of a break, and this song comes on. And you and I and Scott, we all start jamming to it, and we're just having a good time. You're doing the drums, Scott's doing air guitar, and I'm just dancing in the stands. And I often wondered what people must have thought if they saw the three of us that night sitting in the stands, supposed to be radio professionals, and we're doing frat boy radio. And I remember I went back to the station. I think it was Rich Lidstrom who came up to me and he said, hey, nice job on that frat boy radio broadcast last night. And I just looked at him and I said, well, they're either going to put that one in the Hall of Fame or that one will be the end of our careers. Take your pick.
I remember that. I just remember that Bob Warren was the baseball coach. He was working as a third base coach. And all I remember is the screw-up I had because, every third base coach has a signal to show like they're going to wave somebody home, but they really want them to hold up. There's a separate signal for that. And me being the ignorant baseball guy that I am, all I see whenever the Sycamores had a runner on second and the batter hits one, into the outfield and it drops, and Warren's waving a guy home, or at least looking like he wants to wave a guy home. I remember screaming about how he's going to send him home to take the lead, like really loud, and you two were laughing at me because you knew better, and the guy held up at third. So I do remember that screw-up as far as that broadcast, and I do remember how much fun we had doing that. I recall that one very well.
Out of all the things that I have kept from my college days as mementos, whether it be Statesman news clippings or some of the broadcasts I did, that is the one thing that I did not record, I did not do an air check on. And I'm looking at my degree right now here in Lake Orion, and there's times where I wish I could just give that in exchange to have that broadcast, especially now that we don't have Scott anymore, because it was one of my favorites at Indiana State University. I'm really glad that the three of us got to share in that moment.
Me too. Me too, very much. In fact, it just warms my heart to just even hear you talk about it, Duff. You, me, and Scott were blessed to have a great college experience. And this reminiscing has been, I don't know if therapeutic is the right word, but I have a nice feeling talking about the positive things that have gone on with Scott amid all this recent negativity and tragedy.
Scott really loved radio, and Scott really loved the opportunity to get his voice out there. He was just getting ready to do radio again. He had posted on his Facebook page that he was going to have an internet radio show, and I was stoked to hear it. And I told him, if you ever need a voice, I'll gladly lend mine to it. And I'm really pissed that we're not going to hear that now.
Yeah, I mean, that's he would be great. I've always wondered about that, whether he could do a podcast, do his own show, do something now in the age of internet radio and podcasting. I think he would have been great. I don't know what held him up. I know it takes, equipment. It gets complicated, although it's not too difficult. I think he would have been great. And it's, I agree.
After you graduated, Scott did not come back to college that year either. It was kind of like a new season in a television series when that character leaves the show and doesn't come back, and then you have to meet new people. It was kind of different not having Scott around, because I know there were some things going on in his life that he was dealing with, and he just wasn't prepared for another semester of college on top of everything else that he was dealing with, so he went away. But there were times throughout the mid to late 2000s when he would call me and we'd get in touch and we would talk, and it was so good to hear his voice and reminisce about those days at Indiana State University. It really was what Sparky Anderson said, the way college was supposed to be. I know that's the Indiana State University motto, but I'll never forget an interview Sparky did, and I tried to use this in my audition for a commencement speaker speech, which you got to do, by the way. That was something that I wanted to follow in your footsteps, but didn't get that opportunity. But I wanted to quote Sparky Anderson in my speech and say, college is not about getting a better job and making a lot of money. It's about meeting people. It's about getting experiences that you will have for the rest of your life. And I'm glad that one of those experiences that I got at Indiana State University was meeting David Hooper and Scott Reese.
Oh, that's very nice to hear, Duff. That's really cool of you to say. And just we've only touched the surface of all the positive, fun things we did being in sports journalism at that time. Like I said at the outset of your interview, between Bob Knight coming back into the fold because he ended up scheduling us and Larry Bird coming back to Indiana, on top of just the Missouri Valley basketball finally getting some traction, and Gateway football, now the Missouri Valley Football Conference. Those were great times, and I look back on them fondly, and you and Scott and Rich are a big part of that. We had as good of a college experience that I think anyone could have had, especially if you're into following or writing about sports. This has been really, really nice to reminisce with you like this, and like you said, to reflect on all the positives of Scott Reese in his life.
And if I could share just one other memory about those days, that first Indiana State basketball game, you and I were both in that press conference that night, and you and I both got an ass-chewing from Bob Knight in that press conference. First, it was you had asked him what he said to Royce Waltman after the game, and he goes, well, if I wanted you to know, I'd have gone to the loudspeaker and spoken to him. And then later, I made the cardinal sin of, after several minutes of Bob Knight saying how impressed he was with Indiana State, I went and asked him the redundant question, so were you impressed by what you saw from Indiana State tonight? And he just looks at me and says, what the hell have I been saying for the last 20 minutes? Do you understand English? I mean, goddamn. And it's like, oh my gosh, this is something that we're never going to live down. And of course, when I get back to WISU on the following Monday, it's on the board, me being chewed out by Bob Knight. You escaped the ribbing on that one, but I totally got the brunt of it. But those, again, are some memories that you and I can look back on with a lot of fondness and a lot of heart-filled memories with the fact that we got to share that with Scott.
Exactly. And I remember that press conference. You and I both, you know, we'll go to our graves being sports journalists who were yelled at by Bob Knight. I suppose that's something. But like I said, yeah, those times were wonderful. I interviewed Larry Bird on more than one occasion. Some NFL players on more than one occasion, just making those connections. But we'll never forget Scott. As I said earlier, coming to those big football games, going to the basketball tournaments, being a part of all that. And like you mentioned, those road trips, that's a long drive to Springfield. It's a long drive to St. Louis or to Manhattan, Kansas. The Indiana Statesman would not pay for airfare. So Scott Reese and I were in a little rental car from Terre Haute, Indiana to Manhattan, Kansas and back in the span of 48 hours. So that's when you really get to know someone. And he was very, very special and a very neat guy. And like I said, I just started to reconnect with him, and we'll miss him greatly.
I'm really going to miss him too. And I'm glad that we were able to reconnect like this.
Me too, Duff, and this has actually been good for me, selfishly. The last half hour, 40 minutes have been giving me some warm feelings about Scott. So thank you for doing this, and God bless.
Man, it was so good to catch up with David Hooper and talk about those days at Indiana State. Many thanks to you, Dave, for coming on board to talk about Scott here on this special tribute show. Now, as promised, here now is what could be called Scott's Missing 18 Minutes. Now, 6 years ago, I made my first attempt at a podcast. It was called Duff and Friends. Now, don't get it twisted. This was nothing like Fox and Friends. It wasn't anything like that at all. What it actually was, it was a podcast that explored the many topics that people would see in their social media timelines, and then I would discuss it with my Facebook friends. Now, Scott was a regular caller to the program because, you know Scott, he never saw a topic he didn't have a take on. Now, Duff and Friends, it never really took off. So these recordings have just been sitting in my iTunes folder, waiting for the right time to come out. What better time than now to play them back? All right, let's turn this one over to the Friend Zone Hotline. We got Scott in Chicago. Scott, what's your take on all this?
You know, first and foremost, I think we should be in a society where we should all be together. Okay, this is 2013. To me, whether people like it or not, you know, gays, lesbians, transgenders, bisexuals, whatever, they're going to be here. So the way I've always looked at with people, no matter what their orientation is, no matter what their race is, I try to look at people for who they are, and I'm a big believer in the philosophy that we're all here together, we might as well find something that can make us coexist. Now, if the students seem to think that they might themselves cause too much of a distraction, then, okay, fine. Go ahead and have your separate prom. But if they're so weirded out that other people are going to be there, you know, to me, it's just stupid. If they want to go and have a separate prom, if that's their way of thinking, go ahead, let them do it. But at the same point, like I said earlier, it becomes enough of, I think it's more of a distraction, honestly, to have separate. That's just me. I don't understand why we just can't work together.
Let me ask you this. Do you get the sense that eventually students on both sides of this debate could be targeted and unfortunately picked on as a result of this movement?
Oh, I could certainly see that happening. You know, who's to say that the people who want all this stuff done don't go and sneak in to the second prom if it's held on the same day? I don't know if that's what they're wanting to do or not. But who's to say that somebody doesn't show up, you know, to the gay, lesbian, whatever prom and instigate some problems? Who's also to say that maybe somebody that is gay, lesbian, transsexual, whatever, that is at the separate prom doesn't turn around and use this as an outlet to perhaps, quote unquote, get back at some of the people for starting this controversy in the first place? I could easily see it being a problem on both sides.
Now, one of the hot topics in this debate are the controversial comments that were made by Diana Medley, the special needs teacher in Sullivan County. When you heard what she said, what was going through your mind?
I think she's absolutely hypocritical. Okay, being a special needs teacher, she, of all people, should understand that certain things in terms of the way people are not by choice. I don't know if anybody, whether it's friends or family who are gay, lesbian, whatever, who actually choose it. I don't no different than we don't choose, you know, that people don't choose to be straight. Okay? Nobody chooses their orientation. It is what it is. You know, certainly is our choice to act on those things that we're created with? Certainly it is. You know, no different than Duff, you're married. When you saw the first time you saw your beautiful wife, there was, you know, hey, you obviously found her very attractive. Nothing wrong with that. You didn't wake up one day and just say that, wow, this is what the type of person that I want to, you know, that I want to be with. I don't know if that makes sense, if what I'm saying makes any sense or not. What I'm getting at is none of us choose what attracts us and what doesn't attract us. For a teacher to do that, especially a special ed teacher, think of it this way. Special ed kids a lot of times, and I have one in my family, special needs child, will go out and act up in public. They don't mean to do it, but that's just something, you know, something overstimulates them, something causes them to get stressed out easier than those of us who don't have those issues. And people treat them rather ignorantly in society. I don't know how many times I've heard stories of people, for example, who have autism, and they'll act up somewhere out in public, and somebody who doesn't know that they're autistic or knows nothing of autism will go off on the parents saying, you know, why aren't you raising your kids better? Why is your kid acting like a brat when they know nothing about it? So you would think that a special education teacher would have enough sense to realize that people don't necessarily choose what they are. It's absolutely ridiculous. Again, I don't mean any disrespect against any specific religious group. I have a religion I practice as well. But unfortunately, I think at times religion makes people rather stupid. And this is a case of, or at least one instance of that happening.
Now, with that in mind, there is an online petition floating around the internet right now that has about 2,500 signatures attached to it. And it suggests that she be punished or even fired for making those remarks. What action should the school board take in this case?
Oh, boy. I'm torn between a rock and a hard place because I absolutely believe that her comments were stupid. I certainly would not want someone like that to be teaching my son or daughter. At the same point, we live in a country where we're supposed to be able to speak what's on our mind, whether it fits in with what society accepts or does not accept. My father, Vietnam vet, my grandfather, World War II vet, I've had relatives fight on both sides of the Civil War. They didn't fight for our thoughts and our words to be censored. I certainly understand why people would get upset, and I certainly can see why people would want her fired. Again, I don't want a bigot teaching my kid, but at the same point, to me, it's absolutely ridiculous that people are losing their jobs because of their opinions, whether or not we agree with them or not. To me, it doesn't matter. They have a right to their opinion, and I don't think anybody should actually be fired for it.
Now, a lot of people are arguing that this traditional prom concept really undermines the efforts to stop kids from being bullies to one another in the schools. What progress are we making in that department?
I think, number one, first of all, we do have to find better ways to communicate to people. I've often always believed that you are raised to hate. I don't think hate is just something that people are born with. I'll give you a fair example. When I was younger, my grandfather had told me a story. He made up one, but it was a good way to make sure that I didn't turn into a racist. And he said, you're on a boat in Lake Michigan, and the boat tips over, and you can't swim. And nobody's there, and all of a sudden, there's a black guy. Now, what are you going to do? Are you going to just stay there and drown, or are you going to let that black guy save your life? And I said, well, of course, I'm going to let him save my life. And he said, well, if that black person is good enough to save your life, he's good enough to be your friend. I wish more people would think that way and would raise their kids to think that way. None of us are perfect. I certainly am not. I highly doubt anybody that is going to listen to this is perfect, and if they are, I would love to get some tips on how to do that.
Best advice I could give, Scotty, keep coming back to the friend zone.
Anytime, Duff. Pleasure to be here.
And so I go to a lot of news sites, particularly ones on Facebook, and I like to see what they're posting. Now, during a given day, any media organization is going to post lots and lots of different stories that are pertaining to news, either it be locally or nationally, whichever, and it's going to be something that's going to create debate. People just want to chime in. But despite the number of stories that are on any media outlet's Facebook page, if there's one that's deemed unworthy in the eyes of some, that's when we get to hear from, is this newsworthy guy? And let me just say, I hate this jackass with every fiber of my being. Because if it's not newsworthy to you, why did you even read it? Why are you here to comment? This is another classic case of a troll. When I see somebody who posts, is this newsworthy? What qualifications do you have to question the editorial judgment of this news outlet that you've come to comment on?
And I went through it. Do you want me to use my example, or I could use another example of somebody?
No, go ahead and use yours, because I think that's a great story, man.
Okay. Long story short, those of you listening, not everybody knows that I'm visually impaired. When I was in high school, I was our school's field goal or extra point kicker. I never asked for any publicity. Quite frankly, I never wanted it. But somebody did an interview with me for the local paper, was on the front page, wasn't expecting any of that. 2-3 days later, I'm summoned down to the school library by a police officer. He hands me a copy of USA Today, and it was in there.
Wow.
Next thing you know, it took off like a storm. To the point, and I hated this, I was embarrassed by this, but to the point where over the loudspeaker, our principal would say, for those of you wanting to watch Scott Reese, he's going to be on the, you know, on the 6 o'clock news. I went, oh my God, no.
I think you showed me that story too, by the way. Is that the one where the sports anchor's at the desk and he said, well, you know, when you got all those people standing in the end zone waving their arms trying to distract the kicker, well, he can't see him, so it doesn't impact him at all. It doesn't affect him in any way, shape, or form.
Correct. There was that. There was, which I'm sure you remember. I'm sure they'll remember. Scott Reese is legally classified as being blind. The guy in England who couldn't pronounce our head coach's name right. Anyway, here's the point.
I'm sure he's had time to get over that.
Yeah, hopefully. A few state championships, and yeah, I'm sure he has after those. But anyway, long story short, it got to the point where one of the things in the school newspaper was, what is your reaction to Scott Reese's publicity? The majority of the people that they interviewed were cool about it. There was one girl who said, this is getting old and I'm tired of it. And I remember part of the article, which I still have somewhere lying around in my parents' house, is that it's funny how I was the person that everybody made fun of. But now because I'm on USA Today, I'm on ESPN, I'm over on this media outlet, that media outlet, now everybody wants to act like they're my damn best friend. And all of these people that were bashing me right and left were just doing it out of jealousy. Mm-hmm. So when that happens, and Duff, there was a young lady back home who was on a TV show called Nashville Star, which I don't think it's on anymore, but it was the country music equivalent to American Idol or X Factor or any of those shows. And Nicole, who's an absolute sweetheart, she's great in concert. She's got a child and she's married, and her husband said, go after your dream. Well, there were people who would write letters to the editor, both online and in the printed versions of the paper, who were saying, well, she needs to be at home. She needs to be a mom. Blah, 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 blah. I can't believe how insensitive and how heartless and blah, blah. And I'm like, jealous.
You know, I would say that about
saying that type of crap and spewing that type of hatred towards somebody.
Mm-hmm. I would say that about Kate Goslin before I would say that about this person.
Yeah, well, but I mean, you know, people are envious. They're going to say ignorant things. If my acting career takes off, you don't think there's going to be some people, even some people, Duff, that you and I worked with back in the day, that might go and take a pot shot at me or two? For sure.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. I think that there's always going to be that guy. And that's the thing that Facebook and social media has done, is it's given a voice to everybody. Coming to find out that, you know, it's all about what my journalism professor, the late Dave Bennett, said to me when it came to the topic of opinions. He said, they're like assholes. Everyone's got them and they stink. And unfortunately, they're all at the forefront now, thanks to Facebook. There's its good things and bad things about social media. And I think that's just one negative aspect of it that seems to get magnified when everybody gets to comment on something now. Let's go to Scott in Chicago. So, Scott, what is on your workout playlist?
Oh, geez. Let's see. The top of my playlist, would absolutely have to be Till I Collapse by Eminem.
Actually, Till I Collapse is near the bottom of the pack. Lose Yourself is number two.
Whoever did this list is absolutely insane. Lose Yourself is a good one, too, though. Till I Collapse is a perfect song just in so many ways. It's great for people who need... You know, they feel they need to boost something going when they're working out. It's a great song for people who are injured and who are working out. You can get images in your head of all the stuff that you've been through to get to that point. To me, that song is takes the cake. Obviously, we all don't have the same tastes and the same interests and whatnot. But for me, I would absolutely put that song as my number one song right now to work out to.
Number nine, this was an interesting choice here. Queen's Another One Bites the Dust.
That's my funeral song, by the way, Duff.
That's your funeral song?
When it first came out, I was five, and I always said, that was going to be my funeral song, so I'm actually putting that in my will.
What are some songs that you never want to hear in a gym or should never be played in a gym?
Oh, God. I would seriously want to strangle somebody if I ever heard any Meatloaf in the gym. I just don't want to hear... When I'm working out, I need something that's going to pump me up. I don't need some wussy love ballad crap being played over. That would make me want to walk out of the gym.
Yeah, I think you need to watch that episode of Celebrity Apprentice again when he went face-to-face with Busey. He's not the wussy that you're making him out to be.
That was all mine in my basket.
Bull mother
No, I've been
Hold on, guys. Hold on.
You don't want to make you... Get out! You don't want to start with me!
Meat, don't do it. Don't do it.
Mother You do not want to with me! You look in my eyes, I am the last person in the world you ever want to with.
Okay, so maybe you don't want that guy in the gym, but you're going to tell me that guy's a wuss?
Well, he may not be, but his music sure as heck is. You know, I'm just not a big fan of love songs. I don't want any of that stuff played when I'm working out.
Okay, now let me ask you this, Scotty. What are some songs that you would be embarrassed to mention, but you're going to tell me anyway that you would like to listen to while you're working out?
There's one that jumps right at me, and it's probably the most embarrassing, and the one that I can just jumps out like a sore thumb, but I'll admit it. Hanging Tough by New Kids on the Block.
Oh, wait for it. He is Scott in Chicago, and he is Hanging Tough with us in the Friend Zone today. Thanks for the call. I often see myself and others posting polite requests, stop sending me invites to play games with you.
Thank goodness somebody else said it. Oh, God.
Sounds like you've been asked to play quite a few rounds of Candy Crush, Scott.
Don't these people have lives? Don't they have jobs? Why? What are they doing on Farmville?
Scott, they have jobs. They just have downtime in their jobs, or they're pretending to work so they can go to Farmville.
Well, good. I need a job that pays me to be on Facebook. I'm just so sick and tired of getting... I have, because I have parents who are in declining health. So I have my cell phone turned on at all times during the night. And that way, if there's a phone call or if I get a message, whatever, and something's going on with one of my parents or both of them or whatever, I can make the appropriate contact and get that squared away. So nothing boils my ass more than at 3 o'clock in the morning having my phone ding, 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 ding. Such and such has sent you a friend request to play Candy Crush Saga. Kiss my ass. I don't want to hear this at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm trying to sleep. No, I'm tired of it. Farmville. I don't want to play Farmville. I don't want to play Pot the Farm. You guys ever hear that one?
No, that's a new one.
Pot Farm was a few years ago. You could actually grow and maintain your own marijuana farm on Facebook.
That's the official Facebook page now of Colorado and Washington.
Washington, it should be.
Coming soon to a state near you.
I wish, since it's legal, I guess I can say this. Next year, I plan on actually going to Seattle.
Nice.
I have friends and family out there, and oh yeah, since it's legal, just out of curiosity, I plan on walking into one of those shops.
Get you some brownies, you know, why not?
A pack of Marlboro Greens?
That was such a Scott Reese thing for him to say. Would you expect anything less? Finally, to wrap up this tribute show to Scott, I want to say something now directly to him. You weren't perfect. You weren't meant to be. You weren't your disability. You just saw the world a little different from the rest of us. You loved your Blackhawks, and you never missed an opportunity to remind me whenever they beat Detroit. And yet I would still clap back, "Let's go Red Wings." You cheered on your beloved White Sox. I adopted the Tigers as that other team that I root for. You despised the Chicago Cubs. I grew up in a Cubs house. You were the blind assassin, and I was Duffer the Stuffer. You had a fondness for snakes, and you kept them as pets. They scare the shit out of me. You gave your own weather updates on Facebook, and I'm using it now to let people know your story. You were exactly who Scott Reese was supposed to be. You are my friend, and I will be forever grateful for that. Now, whenever Scott and I would do those radio broadcasts of baseball games at Indiana State, coincidentally, the skies above were always clear. It was almost always a beautiful day for baseball whenever Scott and I were behind the mic. But that didn't stop me from always saying the following whenever Scott was my partner. Fans, it's a beautiful day here at Bob Warren Field. There's not a cloud in the sky, unless you count that dark cloud that always seems to follow Scott around. And of course, he would get a good chuckle of that, and then we just move on and continue to follow the game. Scott's senseless and tragic death is a reminder that we need to hold on to every memory you have with the people in your life. When you see the world the way Scott couldn't, just take a second. Take in the beauty and joy in everything. Scott, that dark cloud is gone forever. May the sun shine forever in your memory. And to everyone who knew and loved Scott Reese, always look up. And now, Scott, here is your long-distance dedication. Now, as you heard earlier, Scott wanted Another One Bites the Dust played at his funeral. Don't ask me why. I have no idea. Given the way, however, that he died, his sister Kat decided against it. She did, however, give me the green light to play it here. We're going to miss you, old friend. Good night, Scotty Eyes. So long, everybody.
Let's go! He walks slowly down the street with the brim pool way down low. Ain't no sound but the sound of his feet. Machine guns ready to go. Are you ready? Hey, are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat? Out of the doorway, the bullets rip to the sound of the beast, yeah. Another one bites the dust. Another one bites the dust. And another one gone, and another one gone. Another one bites the dust, yeah. Hey, I'm gonna get you too. Another one bites the dust.